All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You're listening to Oilers Nation Radio, presented by The Nation Network. Subscribe for free on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Thank you, Lisa. Oilers Nation Radio, episode 145. I am Bag Milk here with Tyler, Rick, and Dan. We are going to break down all things Edmonton Oilers for the next hour or so of your life. Before we get started, Tyler, did you say we're going to get a new intro soon?
Yeah, the whole network's getting new intros. I've been hard at work.
Ooh.
Rewriting and re-jingling.
Was this part of Frank's contract? Like before he was going to sign with the team, he's like, "Hey, these guys need new intros. This needs to be fixed." Like,
we should get good, or we should get Sarah Volley to voice our intros for us.
And just get Frank like now that he's on the team, we need to get our money's worth. And Sarah Volley voices everything we do now.
Even the stuff he's on, he has to intro and be like, "This is the Frank Sarah Volley podcast."
It all has to start with. I have breaking news.
Yeah, exactly.
Into the show.
We'll get to that in just a second. But first, want to shout out our friends at Sherwood Ford the Giant out in beautiful Sherwood Park, Alberta. It is time for a new vehicle. I've decided for you. You've been humming and hawing over the last few months or years. I can tell. I can feel it. I can feel it in my bones and in my spirit. And now it's time to head on out to Sherwood Park and get it. A new F-150 maybe, Dan? New Bronco? Mustang?
Any of them.
Or 1987 Ford Escort GT. Still looking for them. We're still looking for them. Maybe if you follow Sherwood Ford on Twitter, at Sherwood Ford, or on Instagram, at Sherwood Ford underscore the Giant, you too can ask for a 1987 Ford Escort GT. Maybe you'll have better luck getting one than we will. Because I'm thinking that we're just holding out for Broncos now. They couldn't find the Escorts, but they do have the Broncos.
They're tough to find.
They're tough to find. 1987 was a long time ago. Tyler wasn't even born yet.
Nope.
But the Broncos? Yes. Yes. So as we alluded to at the beginning, big news for the network this week. We announced that Frank Saravalu joined the team. Wow. He will be doing all the stuff over at dailyfaceoff.com. If you know Daily Faceoff, it's probably your home for fantasy hockey, lineups, combos, all that stuff. But now with Frank in the mix, we are updating upgrades, Tyler.
Yes, sir. It's going to be exciting. It's we talked about this on Real Life more in depth yesterday with Frank, spent like an hour with Frank too. And he's going to be a bit more of a regular on this pod as well. He can stop by, give us all the ins and outs of what's happening and how it could affect the Oilers. But my favorite part of his article is when he had a quote from an agent. And at the end of the quote, the article goes, "Sources told Daily Faceoff." And I told Frank, whenever he breaks news online, he needs to do with like what Waj and Shams do in the NBA.
Yeah, Waj bomb.
When Frank comes in with a Frank bomb, he needs to go. Like, the Oilers have signed Ryan Nugent-Hopkins to a 6-year deal worth $5 million. Sources tell Daily Faceoff. I think he needs to start doing that. It'd sound cool.
Also,
explosion.
We're also going to have to get all that content up, sponsored by Frank's Red Hot Sauce. So it's Frank's Red Hot Rumors, Frank Saravalli.
We should sell the breaking news Frank does. Like, this Frank bomb is extra spicy, brought to you by Frank's Red Hot Sauce. The Oilers have acquired Ricard Raquel.
Once Frank gets kind of established, yeah, then it's like he gets his deal and he lets us know and we sell that to a partner immediately. We put it up for auction and the highest bidder comes in and they sponsor the Frank Explosion.
The Frank Explosion. That's what we should nickname Frank bombs now that he's a part of the nation. It's a Frank Explosion.
The biggest mistake he already made this week is giving me his phone number. So I will be hitting him up with Frank Explosion suggestions as soon as we're done here. Tyler, as we start off the podcast, I am turning to you for this week's Sherwood Forward Giant Question of the Week. Welcome to Frank Saravalli. Big day. Big day for the Nation Network.
This week's Sherwood Forward Giant Question, if you could have one day in Edmonton with Frank Saravalli, what activities would you plan with him? No, I'm kidding.
Oh, you take him to the bat on 97th. You get him to push it around.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be really nice.
Pint for both lunch and dinner.
Of course.
Pint maybe well, no, maybe brunch. After dinner.
Just after dinner. Okay. You just want the party.
Yeah. There's a plenty of nice places to eat, but yeah, let's come in and show him a little Saturday night action.
Maybe a nice segue tour of the River Valley with Frank. That'd be really nice.
He strikes me as a guy who'd appreciate the River Valley, and he'd also appreciate the pint. No, our actual
you don't need the segues though, man. We got the little scooters out there. We don't need segues.
Oh, could you imagine all of us led by Saravalli scooting down Jasper? That'd be lovely.
Short for giant question: the Montreal Canadiens advanced to the Stanley Cup Finals with a win last night. My question is, the NHL is a copycat league. What can the Edmonton Oilers learn from this Montreal Canadiens team?
What they can learn, Tyler, I'll start things off, is that you need a goalie that can stand on his head and get like a 930 save percentage or whatever Carey Price is rocking right now, because he has been sensational. He has been sensational. But one question I want to ask before we actually get to it is, Frank brought this up. We brought Saravalli up already. He brought this up yesterday on Real Life. Is it that the Canadians were so good or that the Golden Knights could not execute?
Number two.
I think it's one.
Same with the Winnipeg Jets.
I think that's a part of it, but also that's the part of going on a playoff run, right? Is that you just find 100%. Ways to squeak out wins.
Yep.
100%.
And I mean, the Jets getting swept by the Montreal Canadiens, I think, was not indicative of their skill level. Us getting swept by the Jets was not indicative of our skill level. And the Leafs losing to the Montreal Canadiens in 7 games probably was an indication of their level. It's just sometimes teams play better. And the fancy stats say that as well. At Jay Fresh Hockey had that out this morning that Montreal has played tighter than any playoff opponent since 2018. The fancy stats say that the Vegas Golden Knights expected goal for percentage 5v5 was actually 48.8%, which is hashtag low. So, I mean, you know, I think you're right, Bagmilk, that goaltending definitely plays a role, but that team in general plays a system that they all just have bought into. And it is just, you know, they outwork you in every level of the game. It's that forecheck, it's the defense, the team defense. It's the stuff that we talked about with this Oilers team that did really good. Our Oilers team did really good in our own end playing team defense, but then otherwise it just wasn't there. And then your offense is demanded to do better than the other team's offense. And, you know, we've seen it with the Montreal against Vegas. They absolutely shut down Vegas's offense.
One thing that I will say for real about this Montreal run is I think it shows that if you've got skilled young players that are ready to go, you got to give them a chance. Mm-hmm. Cole Caulfield was a scratch earlier in the playoffs. And it's just like to watch him now, it's just how is that ever a thing? You know, and people talked about the size, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? That kid's a playoff performer. And another lesson I would learn, Tyler, I think. Careful who you trade. Nick Suzuki coming back to haunt the Golden Knights in that series. I like it. What did you guys learn? Tyler? Rick?
I think I learned the importance of depth in team hockey. And I think that's something the Oilers should focus on. Like, yes, they need to get a high-end winger, but I think this puts an emphasis on, you know, don't just get Nuge and one other guy, get Nuge, another guy, and another guy, and get ready to trade for someone at the deadline. And you need a full lineup. You need four lines that all have the ability to win their matchup night in and night out, so that when your top line falters, the second and third and fourth lines still give you enough of an advantage that you can grind your way to winning out a hockey game. And that's something the Oilers haven't had enough of. And we know how important depth was, but I think here as Oilers fans, we've always just kind of said, you know, the high-end skill will always be enough. It'll be enough. You have that high-end skill, but it won't be. I think you need to find a way to create a bottom six, whether it's young guys, old guys, whatever, a bottom six that can routinely win their matchups.
Rick, what did you learn from that Montreal Canadiens?
I think you guys both hit it right there. It's a little bit of the guys with the skates on their feet. They have to go out there and play the type of game that's going to get you a win in the playoffs. And it's not necessarily the type of game that's going to win you, get you wins in the regular season. But at the same time, they need some help. And I think your GM has to kind of give you the proper ingredients to win these series. And then your coach actually has to address them and use everybody to their best of their ability. And I think we saw a little bit of a negative in all three of those areas this year as the Oilers. And that's kind of why we were out so quick. I don't think they've done anything special. This type of hockey has won playoffs a lot. And until they change the officiating a little bit to open up the game for the skill players, let them do their jobs properly, this is kind of what it's going to take, because you're not going to get any help from the guys with the stripes on their arms.
I know we're talking about Saravalli a lot, but what did he say yesterday, Tyler, in real life? It was something like boring hockey is winning hockey or something. Was that his quote?
Yeah, I mean, in the playoffs, that's certainly what it feels like a lot of the time, right? Is that if you can just sort of grind out and whatever, play a tight game and take the risk that you're going to get the bounce. I know you're shaking your head, Dan, but like, that is true.
I get what Frank is saying, but I don't understand putting down that style of hockey. It's just different. It's a different style of hockey, and it wins a game. Well, I think by saying
it's dumbing it down for sure.
It's not dumbing it down. It's like you see it with other sports too, right? It's a cyclical change of styles of hockey and the way that those teams are successful. It changes all the time. And it just so happens that right now the Islanders and the Habs are two of three teams in the finals, possibly in the finals, that play that style of hockey. But I don't think that, like, Tampa Bay didn't play that style of hockey last year. They were playing run and gun style, and that can be, I think, looked at down upon a little bit too. But it's just, I don't know, it's a cyclical nature of the sport. Sometimes they're successful, sometimes they're not. If Carey Price isn't playing like Carey Price is playing, this style isn't as successful as it is.
Yeah, you need to understand having a good system. Yeah,
but I mean, you look at when the coming out of the 80s and into the 90s, there was so much offense out there, right? And then all of a sudden, Devils started playing the trap game, which was dumbing it down. Like, yes, they had skillful players on the team, but if you were able to go in there and created a style to play a defensive zone where you don't need the skill, like the same high-level skill that your opponent has, right? You start doing the clutching and grab. You start doing the trap type of mentality. I mean, they had it in basketball, and they took it out, right? They took out types of defense that stalled offense. And I think right now you're seeing that a lot. I think for the most part, you're trying to build a skillful team. But if you know you don't have that skillful team, if you know you don't have those top end players, well, then right away you go to the Montreal version. I mean, this Montreal version almost didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, without the 3 points, without the, you know, without the overtime loss, like the OTLs, they're not in the playoffs.
If the Flames would have beaten the Sens twice, they would have.
Well, and
yeah, man, I think it was a team that's played. They played 73 games this year, and they're under 500.
Yeah, I think
there's a team in the Stanley Cup final under 500.
I saw that
dumbing it down.
I saw that this morning, where I guess to further your point, it was a Leafs fan that had tweeted out that if the Stanley Cup finals go 7 games, the Habs will and win the Stanley Cup. The Habs will have won the Stanley Cup, being below or not going above 500 in the entire season, with their playoff and their regular season record.
We're all agree with Dan. Yeah. Is that, like, I don't love the, like, saying it's dumbing it down, because playing this style of hockey is like hard to do. It takes an insane amount of buy-in from everyone on your roster, because if one little mistake and it's a high danger chance and things like that, like your margin of error is so slim when you decide to play that style of hockey and you decide, listen, we know it's going to be 3-2 or 2-1 or something insanely tight, and we're going to trust that we won't be the team to make the big mistake at a key moment. Like, it takes a lot of buy-in. So it's impressive in a way. It's just not as exciting as if this was Colorado Tampa getting set to play for the Stanley Cup.
Well, yeah, it's not, I guess it's not as exciting to the layman, but I think that all of us sitting here and most of the people listening to this podcast understand the game of hockey to that level of appreciating that. We talked about it when the Islanders beat the Lightning in game one. It was like, that was the best game the Islanders have ever played this playoff, and they won it by one goal. So Tyler, you're absolutely right. That's the exciting part to me, is it's like, man, the Winnipeg Jets beat the Edmonton Oilers four games in a row, and they beat us by one goal every time. There was one situation where one goal went their way. Three of those times it was in overtime, and that's the end of the series. So that kind of stuff is beautiful in a sense, but yes, I appreciate what you're saying. To the common fan, it's not going to be as beautiful as a Colorado Tampa.
But it's not going to be as fun to watch either, because you'd like to watch two high offensive teams going out there skating around, moving the puck around. Right? That's what we want to do when we're trying to take clutching and grabbing out of the game, because we want to open it up and watch this more skillful type of situation, whereas this one's going to be a little more third gear where it's kind of grinded down. There's not a lot of room to skate on, not a lot of room to skate on the ice. You know, you don't have a lot of time with the puck. There's a lot of dump and chase. It's not going to be as fluid. It'll be more choppy. And I think that's where it comes down to, is the boring hockey.
The other thing I'll say about a playoff run like this, and hockey in general at this time of the year, when those margins of error are so slim, sometimes the old school or traditionalist hockey fans, diehard hockey fans, they almost like are embarrassed to admit how much luck is involved in this sport, man. Like, to get on a run where you make it this far, you need so many bounces. Remember when the Blues won the Stanley Cup? And a couple rounds before that, they were in a game 7 overtime against the Dallas Stars, where Jamie Benn missed like a grade A scoring chance that he scores 90% of the time. The St. Louis Blues in their cup year were that close to being done. The Montreal Canadiens this year, game 5 against the Toronto Maple Leafs, they're on the verge of being eliminated. They just gave up a third period lead. It's going to overtime. They get outshot 13-2 in overtime in game 5 and win that hockey game. The Habs were the tiniest of bounces away from being done in 5 games in round 1. You need bounces, and it takes a ton of luck to get to this point. And that's why I don't like when teams will be like, well, we lost in the second round again. We're blowing it up. Like, it's fucking hard, and you need to be lucky to get to where the Habs are right now. And they got major Team of Destiny vibes, because everything goes their way.
How funny is it now with hindsight that that horrible cross-ice pass attempt by Alex Galchenyuk, you know?
Yeah.
The one that led to this first Suzuki OT goal. It's funny how you look back on it. And like Tyler said, I agree, man. Like, bounces in hockey are,
you need them,
so much of the game. They're so much of the game. And saves too. Big saves at key moments are a huge part of hockey. Like, Carey Price made some 10 Bell saves a bunch of times throughout this series. And then it looks like Vegas's forwards weren't able to do anything. And then I think
eight seconds before they scored that goal, Pacioretty's right on the hash marks in front of the net all by himself and couldn't score. You score that goal, we're going, you know, it's a completely different story. He couldn't get in, and Carey Price made the save. He just needed a player to step up at the right time, and they got
One thing I will say about teams that kind of play more of a trap style game is that I get what Frank was saying, where he says it's boring hockey is winning hockey. And it is, you know, like, the fucking trap works. Just because it sucks to watch a little bit doesn't mean it doesn't work, you know? Clogging up the neutral zone works. Like, I think what Montreal did very well is they looked at Vegas's game and they adjusted. They adjusted. Plus, they got all the luck we're talking about. They got the saves we're talking about, and Vegas couldn't score.
That's just it, man. You know what? As much as Montreal did a great job and whatever, you need to look the other way and look at those top six and go, guys, Like, it's on you guys. I'm like, Montreal, sure, whatever. You can only expect so much out of that team, but you got to look at the other team and go, sorry, like, it's more of a negative for them than it is a positive for Montreal.
So I saw there are some Vegas fans turning on it. Mark Stone did not have a great series, and there's some Vegas fans that were upset with him. I was cruising Twitter after.
Oh, if Vegas would like to move on from that problem, Mark Stone, I know a couple GMs who might be very interested in that.
Yes. Well, Vegas has like a top seven basically that they slide in and out with Alex Tuck as well as Pacioretty, Stevenson, Stone, Marchessault, Carlson, and Riley Smith. And none of those guys really blew the doors off of Montreal. I think a couple of them had like two goals, but nobody really blew the doors off of them.
So Vegas has been in on pretty much every big name ever since they came into the league.
More or less.
You know they're getting Eichel, right? Like, we're all going to accept that now that Vegas is going to make it work.
We'll just be like, how? And then they move guy X and guy Y, and it just works.
They have to be out of those types of players by now, though. They have.
Petrangelo is going to be. Petrangelo is going to get an allergy that he'll figure out at the end of the regular season next year, Tampa style.
They need to clear up $10 million to bring in Jack Eichel. They will do so by trading Robin Lehner or Marc-Andre Fleury. Let's say they move probably the more difficult one in Robin Lehner. There's $5 million off the books. Oh, Riley Smith.
Is it five, or they're going to have to eat some money there?
No, I think they can find a home for Lehner at $5 mil. And then, Riley Smith doesn't have any trade protection at $5 mil. There you go. Those two are in the package, along with a first round pick, a second round pick, and Cody Glass. Bang. Just made your Eichel deal. Eichel's a golden knight. It's happening, man. I've just accepted the fact that we are going to get Eichel versus McDavid.
Isn't that a really, really, really bad offer? Like a terrible.
Compared to what the reports are, though. The Columbus offer was like Merzlikins, two AB level prospects, and a draft pick.
I only said B plus there because like they aren't really A's, but they're not like bad prospects. Yeah. They're like, you know, our equivalent of like Tyler Benson, or they'll throw in like Zach Whitecloud into the deal or something, right? Like they'll find a way to make it work for Buffalo. I have a funny feeling that's where he ends up.
That's going to be a wild team to watch.
While we wait for the Jack Eichel trade to come through, I actually want to take our best guesses on where he's going to go after this. I encourage you to head on over to skipthedigit.ca, get yourself something to eat this weekend. Make sure you're fed. Maybe you are above legal drinking age and you get yourself some pops. Huh? You don't want to leave your couch. Game 7 tonight. Is it tonight? I think so. Right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, Game 7, Tampa, New York tonight. You don't have time to go to the liquor store. Skip the dishes. They're there for you. Skipthedishes.ca. Well,
we have a weekend ahead of us with nothing to watch on TV too, Bag Milk. So it's going to be a lot of binging and eating, and Skip the Dishes will be there for you.
Yes.
There's the Euro on early in the day.
There is.
Yeah, I suppose.
I've been watching any soccer. It's not my jam.
Watching regular stuff is, but when you get to the round of 16 and almost any type of sport, it's fun to watch. The fans there go nuts. Tough not to feel that coming through your TV.
Well, and to Bag Milk's credit too, I know Bag Milk watches all the games for hockey, so that's a lot of time to be taken up at night. No, you don't watch all the games.
Well, I have been lately. Like I watched, yeah, obviously, I watched last night. Like games that I watch tonight,
the one a day.
That's the thing. There's going to be a anything, gap now, right?
Anything that goes to overtime, I'm turning on.
100%.
You're becoming a big Blue Jays guy, though, right? You're all watching in on this year's Jays.
Watching the Jays, I will say I'm more of a passive Jays fan at best. I like having it on. It's just, that's the great thing about baseball is it's just, to me, it's like golf. You can have it on in the background and just go about your day. And then if you hear a voice come up a little bit or some applause or something, you can turn into it and see what's going on.
That's what's good about them right now is because if you have that on, there's so much excitement in the offensive side of that team that, you know, that'll bring you. I mean, you sit down and you watch six runs in the first inning yesterday. That's fun to watch. You know, you can walk away for the rest of it. There's only three more runs, but yeah, it's fun.
There's nothing better than cleaning the house with a baseball game on. Cause like you can just sort of stop and like watch one at bat because there's a runner in scoring position. Then just like go back to doing your little tasks with the sound on. It's unreal.
I also like, I'm a big fan of baseball right now where the pitchers are taking their clothes off. That's fun. I like that.
So good.
Umpires are giving like a nice little sweaty hair head massage.
I can't believe nobody's tried to imitate the slap shot strip down in baseball style. Like that'd be so good.
So just, I know this is an Oilers podcast, but now I'm on it. Like, so pitchers are taking their clothes off because they think they got some sticky shit. Is this just a new rule? Like, why is this happening right now?
It's Tyler can speak to it better than I can.
Yeah. So basically forever. Yeah. Forever though, pitchers have used some combination of like sunscreen and sweat and rosin, which is in that little bag behind the mound, to get a better grip on the ball. Hitters like it because they know they're not going to get plunked as much and they can predict where the ball is going. Pitchers like it because they get better spin. Well, you give them an inch, they take a mile. Pitchers have eventually started using other foreign substances, pine tar being on the low end of that, and something called spider tack on the high end, which is like basically just glue. It's glue you put on your fingers, and it brings up the rotations on your ball to the point where some of these guys that are thrown in the high 90s, they're getting so much spin that when you're in the batter's box, the ball looks like it's going up at you. Like, it's insane shit. So Major League Baseball finally said, for some reason, randomly in the middle of this year, even though it's been happening for like 5 years, was like, oh yeah, we're gonna cut this out right now. And now all the pitchers are fucked. They can't grip the ball. Umpires need to check the pitchers whenever. An opposing manager can just go to the umpire and say, go check him again, even if he's been checked twice already in the game. It's fucked. Baseball's fucked.
But it's like, you have to admire their ability and their desire to fix it mid-season, because we clamor for that all the time as hockey fans. We're like, change the rules or change the way you call the rules in the middle of the season, but hockey never does it.
No, so, but baseball's just doing it because they're dumb. Like, I don't, this should have been handled like 2 years ago and it wasn't. So,
is there no penalty? Like, the other game again, the other day against Washington, the pitcher got called like what, 3-4 times? Is there no penalty for that?
No, not right now.
Not yet.
It's not considered a challenge. It's not considered anything.
But baseball in their memo to the teams basically said like, hey guys, don't abuse this. All right. We don't want any funny stuff going on. But
I love that they recognized that it was going to be an issue, but they were just like, now you guys all act properly. When we've had a team that has
we're on the honor system
to get there. We've had players taking steroids, but you guys, you be good.
Okay. So let's imagine this: a pitcher he's chucking a no-no at the time. If I'm the opposite, if I'm the opposing manager, I'm just checking him every third fucking batter.
It's the old stick curve check. You just do that right before overtime. Yeah,
the damn Marty McSorley
games.
If there's no penalty for it, and I'm a baseball manager, I'm checking the pitcher every other inning or twice an inning or whatever.
That's the equivalent to a timeout. Yeah. That's like you remember the coach doesn't call a timeout. You're like, fuck, that's 3-4 hits in a row. Can you go check that guy, please? All right, boys. Like, listen the fuck up here. I'll get in his head for you, okay?
I was just trying to find that there's a Twitter account that does all of the video of anybody getting checked for Stick'Em. They posted on that Twitter account.
That's fine.
I'm sure it's the same company that did the Astros cheated account too.
I want to see the compilation video. That's what's going to be fun to watch.
I had this for later in the podcast since we're talking about umps in baseball. Let's talk about refs in hockey. Again, this is going on throughout the playoffs. Tyler, you made an interesting point before we started recording where it was kind of like we Oilers fans have been complaining about the refs basically since McDavid stepped on the ice for the first time. And now it's interesting to see other teams get a dose of it in the playoffs, isn't it?
Yeah, like we complained for years that like, you know, officiating is killing skill. Go watch Connor McDavid. Officiating is killing skill. We said it. He was pointing upstairs to Steve Cazari or whatever, right? We knew this was a problem for so long. And every other fan base was like, oh, you fucking whiners. Oh, yeah, just because you have McDavid, you should be treated differently. The refs already love you guys. You're a Canadian. But we heard it all. And now that the playoffs are affecting everyone in the play or the officiating is affecting everyone in the playoffs, it's a huge story. And it should be. The officiating in this sport has been wildly inconsistent for decades when you compare the regular season to the playoffs. And everyone is starting to sound like, you know, exactly what they made fun of Oilers fans for sounding like. But it's true. There needs to be a referendum. There needs to be a big ass meeting with the 10 best forwards, the 10 best shutdown defensemen, the 10 best referees, and the 10 most powerful executives. They need to sit in a room and rework how they're going to do this shit. Because you cannot continue to have the sport change as drastically as it does from regular season playoffs. Like my dad told me once after watching an Oilers playoff game, in baseball, when it gets to the playoffs, they don't suddenly say, you know what? It takes 4 strikes to get them out. You can't change your sport just because it's the playoffs. It's dumb. It's bizarre. It's barbaric.
Yeah, I agree. We talked about Montreal a little bit earlier. Like Corey Perry almost got his freaking nose cut off, you know, and there was nothing. I find it weird how much we're all defending and praising Corey Perry right now. It makes me really uncomfortable. But at the same time, if that happens to Leon Draisaitl and that beautiful face gets banged up like that, I got a real problem.
Dude, how many years removed are we from dude losing the top of his finger?
Crosby cut someone's finger.
Like, come on. Like, we got the cut on the nose, but we've kind of forgot the fact, like, dude lost part of his finger. And we're like, at the end of the day, we're okay with it?
We do have to proceed with caution.
There's one horrible offside, and all of a sudden the world changes for that. Dude loses his finger, and we're like, yeah, just keep rolling with it, boys. Just
play out of hockey, baby.
We do have to proceed with caution, though, because we are heading towards that level of Vancouver Canuck fans where it's like, see, we told you. We told you it was all rigged from the get-go. Now, they have the tinfoil hat theories of, you know, Boston was destined to win the cup because the NHL had Gregory Campbell on the team or whatever nonsense they had. But we've got to be careful.
Well, here's the thing. I'll counter that with Dan. The reality about Canucks fans is they're not actually fans of the team unless their team is good. So
they're fans of the moment of the event.
I saw someone the other day say that Vancouver could support a second NHL team. And I was like, they can barely support the one they have.
Let's be fair. They're going to be supporting the Seattle Kraken, right? Waka waka.
Man, I was talking about this with Jay a little while ago. Might have been on Real Life, actually, where if we planned it right, and just the stars aligned, we
don't
could
get
do
me
an
excited.
Ultimate nation vacation to Seattle and get in multiple sports in a weekend. Like that would just be the best nation vacation where it's like, oh, okay, we're going to a Mariners game tonight. Oh, the Kraken guys, play and the fucking, then we're going to watch some food.
So.
When does, cruise ship.
Well, that's too bad because the Jays usually do a trip out to Seattle, but I think it's August, so I think we're a little too early for that.
You would have to do it. It would have to be in a year where, like, the Oilers play Seattle.
End of the season?
No, exhibition game. It would have to be if you want to get baseball in there, right? Because baseball and NFL.
MLB playoffs. Oh, you get 50 seats at an MLB playoff game.
Yeah, but the Mariners suck.
Touche. Touche. We'll watch them at the Kingdom then when they were good.
Yeah.
So what are you saying, Tyler? It's got to be preseason?
I think it'd have to be preseason hockey would get you the end of regular season baseball, and it would get you NFL, and you could do all three in one.
But we could skip baseball.
Yeah.
And then go, instead of going to a Mariners game, we go to that thing where they throw the fish.
The Pike Place
the market.
Yeah, the market. We watch them throw fish instead. That'd be fun.
Yo, can you like tip them $5 to whip it to you?
I just think you have to buy the fish, I believe. I was there.
Throw it to you like that, though? Do they whip it to you or do they hand it to you nicely? Because I'll pay the extra couple bucks if I get to, like, one my way.
They yeet it to you.
They yeet the fish.
I would like to run a route first, too. Perhaps like a 4.
Oh, nice.
Or a 9.
Catch the salmon over your shoulder. Just
a nice little corner pattern. Oh, I can see it.
What a podcast we've got going here.
It's getting a little bit random. Back to the reffing talk for a minute. I thought Ray Ferraro had an interesting quote yesterday on the Jason Gregor show. He said, "The popularity of the league will not grow in the current form. They have to have a plan moving forward. I don't want to see stars being mugged and headlocked all over the ice. You are dumbing down the game for those with less skill." Do you agree with Ray Ferraro? Because I do.
Yes. There's no way to look at it. There's no other way of looking at it. Like,
I don't
need
think
to fix it. Otherwise, not going to be. You're about to go into a U.S. market, which is probably going to be the biggest, as much as we don't like to say it, it's going to be the biggest market that's been in for a while, right? You can't have this type of officiating. Who's going to take it seriously? Why would you get behind a team? You got a big player in your city, and now you see he gets treated terribly, and the refs just turned the other. Why watch that?
See, I think Ferraro's personification there at least it came off to me as like he was saying, like we're going to a thuggery kind of league. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I think what we're heading towards is just lawlessness. Like you've got Kucherov getting, but like Crosby taking off a fingertip, like there's a superstar that they're supposed to be protecting, but he's actually one of the pieces of shit that took off a guy's fingertip. So I don't know. Like it's just, there's such a lack of accountability, and it's, and you see it, in every facet of the game. And, you know, I have a solution. I'm wearing the shirt right now.
I was going to say, you're wearing the shirt.
I just believe that, you know, the league, since it removed an element of hockey, or it's attempted to remove an element of hockey with the instigator penalty, hockey fighting was what stopped a lot of this ticky-tacky bullshit that got dirty. There was still ticky-tacky stuff.
I don't necessarily believe
they
that.
They didn't call instigator. They don't even call the instigator.
It rarely
is. But the instigator exists. So it's that element of deterrent.
I mean, it empirically is.
The numbers go down when they instituted the instigator rule.
I do agree with you to an extent. Like we don't need to go back to the, and I love it more than, but I understand that it's not healthy in the long run. So the snacks of the world and the rightists of Bonanens, and that's fair. But I do think that I do wish that, as much as we didn't like him here, there is still an element of the game where someone like Lucic could prevail. You know, somebody who still has a little bit of could play a little bit of skill. You know, if ever could have a Tom Wilson, that'd be fantastic.
But McDavid didn't draw more penalties with Lucic in the lineup. That didn't solve the problem, and it won't. Like, you know, Mayfield isn't taking it easy on Kucherov because he's worried about Ross Colton or whoever the hell it is.
But what is happening to McDavid isn't criminal. You know what I mean? Isn't yet at that level of, you know,
but it's not
Kucherov. What happened to Kucherov? But what happened to Kucherov could as easily just as happened to McDavid.
McDavid got flipped against Winnipeg and he didn't get called. Yeah. McDavid hasn't drawn a single penalty in either of his last two playoff series.
That was immediately.
But don't you think Archibald got suspended also? Which is ridiculous. But don't you think that the player itself wouldn't be keeping his knee in a little bit had he known that Luch or somebody was going to do anything? Like,
that's
if that was like Crazy Eyes 2017, you're probably not doing that because you don't want to deal with Crazy Eyes 17's
that. But here's where I go forward from that. I think Rick's right, Tyler, and I think I'm right too. But I also think that there is an evolution, and that's the thing, is that we have to find the next step. I don't know if it's the Department of Player Safety myself, just because they've shown an ineptitude to be able to solve a lot of these issues, but there has to be a solution. And again, it sucks to be the person that's just saying it's all wrong and here was the old solution of hockey fights. And I agree that there needs to be a new solution, and I don't necessarily believe it's just let's bring back George Laroque and Derek Bougard and that'll fix everything. But there is a solution that has to be found, and it's up to the league to figure it out.
The solution is tell the refs to call the rule book.
I was going to say, let's solve this right now, boys. If you got a magic wand and you're sitting in that 10 by 10 by 10 or whatever Tyler said for a committee, what is your fix? Mine, I'm with Tyler. It's call the rule book.
I think it's
called the rule book. That's fine. But I'm not taking that. I'm not, as a coach or as a team, or I'm not going to over penalize somebody who skates by the bench and goes, hey, listen, you guys keep fucking doing that. I'm not coming for you. I'm going to take out your little buddy over here and we're going to go, you know, eye for an eye. It doesn't have to be like an automatic swing to the head or something like that, but you got to skate by the bench and look at that team and go, hey, listen, when Tkachuk was going crazy here at the beginning of the year, you know, you skated by the bench and told the, listen, I'm not coming for you. I'm going to go find your buddy Johnny.
My solution is, I've talked about it before on this podcast. I listened to another podcast called Against the Rules with Michael Lewis, and he did a really good piece on what the NBA did to fix their officiating. And I think the NHL could learn a lesson from them. And it was the NBA created a new war room where there's just referees that are watching the game, and they, if there's anything egregious that they see, they can radio in to the referees and let them know. But but the big point and the big reason that they created this was to have the referees be accountable for themselves. And so they can help each other by saying, okay, this is what you missed in this quarter, or this is what you missed in this half, and work together with the referees. Because right now, the way that referees look, I feel like the way that referees look at with video review is it's the eye in the sky, and it's going to make them look stupid. And what they need to be looking at with video review is a way to get better. And yes, you can tell them to call all the penalties they want, but I think that the more important thing is catching the stuff that they're missing and help them build the tools to be better as referees going forward.
I think you need to get before that and fix it and just make them better at their jobs coming in. I don't know exactly how you do that, if there's some sort of massive training course you have to go through. But I think when it comes to we don't want more review. We don't want more review. What we want is the guys on the ice. The refs have been staring at guys. Staring at him and watch a dude get punched in the face and not call it. A review is not going to change that.
But that's where the accountability element comes in, though.
But I want to go before that too and just have them like coming in. There's a new standard there's new standards. You got to meet this, or you go. You know that there is.
Or you get relegated. Relegate refs.
That is a shocking element to me, is that there's like everybody says that the referees, they earned their job, they earned their position,
relegate them.
But it's the same 7 or 8 referees every year. And it just usually goes by longevity. They don't have a lot of rookie referees in there that are, you know, young upstart whippersnapper referees that have been calling the queue really well. It's a lot of guys that just have called,
but they're good young referees
in this country.
But there's very few of them, actually. What they're doing is turning hockey players into referees because they can skate and keep up out there. There's the being a ref, just like being an umpire or anything else, that is dwindling these days. It is not fun to do that as a 14, 15, 16-year-old. You're getting absolute shit on. You're getting
Rick
shit
is in
on
the stands yelling at you.
I was bad when I was younger, when my little brother was playing ball hockey, and I don't remember how old I was. But after that one was – I shut up after that.
I yell at the prospects
if I'm paying for the ticket, well, part of that, you can take part of your money and buy earplugs. I'm here for a reason. But no, like, it's just not fun. So building it up from a child who gets to turn into a referee, I don't think that happens anymore. They're legit going out and trying to find hockey players because they can skate and keep up out there and try to reteach them. We need to get to the 14, 15-year-olds and figure it out and bring them up in like a system, like Hockey Canada. Like, there's got to be a system. You've got to go through, you know, checks and balances. You got to go through the training every year. That's how you get this fixed in the long run. You're not going to fix it tomorrow because I don't know what you do right now. You got to bring them up. You got to get them when they're young.
I think we're asking the kids of today to turn into narcs, you know?
We need the NHL to reach out, and you need the NHL to go out and above themselves and go out and, you know, start to bring these kids in, because it's going to help them in the long run.
Don't play hockey, kids. Rat out your friends that do. I think that's the lesson.
You're just keeping them accountable. That's all.
I don't know what the answer is to the refing situation in the NHL. I don't know what it is. I don't think it's going to change. They're bad. They're very inconsistent. It's like, it's funny to me that it turns into eventually. I don't remember a time when we've ever seen the Hockey Night in Canada panel do this many segments on how bad the refs are.
Not with Ron McLean on it. That's for sure.
It's really weird, isn't it?
I also don't remember a time where a referee has been like criticized by name as ruthlessly as Chris Lee.
But you're a young man, Tyler. There was a time where the names were on the back of the jerseys.
Yeah.
And those guys got articles written about them.
Yeah.
It was vicious, and that's why they took it away.
Since the names got taken off the backs, like, Chris Lee is getting fucking ripped by everybody. Like,
he's showing up in memes.
It's pretty wild. I'm a little surprised, but
let's get the names on the back of them jerseys again, then.
There's way more cameras out there now, right? So in the 80s, you didn't see that stuff. Now we have 19 different angles out there, and you can find everything. There's nobody gets away with anything on that ice anymore.
It's almost funny to think about how, you know, in the 90s or whatever it was, I don't remember when they went to the 2-ref system, there was only one for a long time, forever. There was only one.
Do you think it was the 90s?
I don't remember.
Trying to think. When we were playing the Stars in like 97 and 98.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's one.
I don't remember.
It might even be the early 2000s.
It could be. If you know the answer to the question, hit us up, ON Radio Podcast. In the meantime, head on over to cornerstoneins.ca and look at all of the glowingly wonderful insurance products here for you. On the left-hand side of the screen, they've got a button for Citizens of the Nation. Get yourself a little discount. For 90 years and four generations, Cornerstone Insurance has been a family and employee-owned business here in Edmonton, and they are here to help with whatever insurance products you may need. All right, I'm tired of talking about the refs.
We've barely talked Oilers.
I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it, Tyler.
Well, that's on them. That's on them. They have not given us very much to talk about. We can still sneak out a couple of segments here, but they are forcing us to talk about the Blue Jays. They're forcing us to talk about the referees. Hopefully this is going to change soon.
Listen, if somebody in, at OEG wants to start taking their clothes off after like some kind of ref call or whatever, like they do in baseball, then let's talk about it. In the meantime, though, a couple of housekeeping items, nothing crazy. Mark Messier signed a multi-year deal to be on a part of ESPN's hockey coverage that came out yesterday. I think that's interesting, you know? One network gets Wayne, the other one goes for the Moose. Who wins? I don't know. But it makes sense to me. It's like if you're going to try and grow the game, you pick guys whose name you know, even if you don't know anything about the sport. And I feel like Mark Messier is one of those guys.
Here's what I'll say about this, is this might grow the game with an older audience in the States, but this isn't, in my opinion, going to do a ton to grow the game with like people younger than me in the States. And I'm not sure how... They don't speak that age. A 16-year-old who's never watched hockey before won't know who they are. And I'm not convinced. I, as a diehard hockey fan and someone from Edmonton who knows Messier and Gretzky, I would love to listen to their takes on the game and hear it. I'm not sure if they're like natural TV guys. Messier maybe, but I don't think Wayne is going to be like dropping in some witty comments and giving you great insight on stuff. I'm just not sold on it.
But I think it's exactly what you said. These are guys for the older generation to bring them in. They're like, oh, sure. I know that name. I know that name. And then I think the hope would be that if fucking 53-year-old Carl is sitting down to watch a Carolina Hurricanes game, he's got his kid there, you know? And Rick.
But Blue. Like a guy like Messier has been good in television commercials, pop culture.
Those Lay's commercials?
He's in that Tide commercial randomly.
Seven seconds at a time. It's so much.
No, different. But so here's the thing. So he's got some good comedic delivery. I think he's one of those guys that actually will be good. I agree with you completely on Wayne Gretzky. I love Wayne Gretzky to death, but the knock I feel like has always been against him is that he can see the game differently than anybody else, and he's not necessarily the best at explaining that to other people. That's why it didn't work out with the Phoenix Coyotes at the time. It's hard to explain to a third line grinder how he sees the game. And I don't know if it's going to be that easy to explain to a television broadcast audience.
I heard a really good secondhand story about regrets when he was in Arizona. There was obviously a player from Edmonton that was out there, and they got shut out whatever, three periods, no goals. Gretz came into the dressing room. How the fuck can't you guys score one goddamn goal? Like, and I mean, this is probably whatever year, so it's not great offense at that time either, right? Like, I think what just is so easy and comes so naturally to him that I don't know it's very easy to teach that or, you know, accept the other. He also said when he retired, he's like, I'm not playing like alumni games, and he's played very few of them because he felt he didn't want to play hockey unless he's playing against the best of the best.
It's like Elon Musk trying to teach me physics, you know.
I mean maybe it's because it happened at like when I was younger, but I quite often forget that Wayne Gretzky head coached the Phoenix Coyotes. What an odd time in the world.
Yeah,
and didn't get paid his full bill.
Yes,
well, I think they've got to have that. They had to have that settled up by now.
Oh yeah,
he came back.
He went dark until they did.
Long time.
I wonder if old Daryl had to step up and make up some of that coin here to get Wayne back in the NHL picture.
Do maybe I'm not supposed to say Tyler Wayne Gretzky as a St. Louis Blue?
No, I barely remember Gretzky's playing. I don't remember Gretzky's playing career.
It was 8 days he was there. That guy was there for like a cup of coffee.
The list of teams that wasted Wayne Gretzky's talent is long. The Rangers, the Kings, the Blues. Mm-hmm. All of them wasted his talent, won no championships with him.
What else I got on my list? Oh, yeah. Oscar Klefbom, not exempt from expansion. The league released a list of who is exempt from expansion, and I was looking through it, and there's outside of Michael Ferland, everybody hasn't played in forever. Like Henrik
Zetterberg. This is a good thing, though, isn't it? This is a good thing.
Yeah.
This doesn't allow you 100%. To pull some sort of weird Tampa Bay fucking skirt around the salary cap issue. Like, well, literally, he could be. If this guy could play in the next year and a half, then yes, he's a part of this.
Kucherov, when he got hurt last game, there was so many jokes coming out already about how he's like, oh, he'll be good for game one of the playoffs next year. Don't worry about it. But no Klefbom exemption. Sorry, Oilers fans. I can't help but shake the idea that this Klefbom thing is just one of the biggest kind of items hanging over the team right now. It's just, we need an answer.
It is. There's no denying it, but I think they know more than it's out there, and that's good. We don't need to know. I don't want it getting out to another team that he's this, that, or the other thing. I want everybody to have a massive question mark over it and to be about four people involved in it. And they can tell us once the lists are out and whatever after that, tell us whatever you want at that point. But at this point, I don't want to know a damn thing. Because if I know something, then guys who out there can hurt our team can know something too. So I want three or four people to know, and that is it.
I like that. Keep your shit tight. Other thing this week, and I want to talk to you guys about the reaction because this is very Oilers. On Twitter, our friends at Puckpedia were asked a question about Matej Blumel, who was a 100th overall pick in 2019. And Puckpedia responded, the Oilers had until June 1st to sign him, and they didn't. So he's no longer their player anymore. He was drafted out of the USHL, but is not a major junior player, college player, or player drafted from Europe. So they only had 2 years to sign him. Now, normally, a fourth round pick doesn't really draw too much of a reaction when a organization decides not to sign them, but that isn't how things go here in Edmonton. You know, that's just not. I was cruising around Twitter a little bit. I wrote an article about it on The Nation. Dan threw it into our group text for news, and he's just like, hey, here's something I noticed. So I wrote about it. Boys, the reaction for not signing Blumel, I don't even know how to say his name.
Blumel.
The reaction for not signing Blumel was hilarious. Like, wow.
Well, yeah. So when I saw it, I thought, first of all, I thought, wow, okay, that's a strange transaction. Just because I've covered the prospect update and Blumel has been featured a few times. He's had some good weeks in my statistical prospect update. But the reason I threw it to the group chat was just because, yeah, us Oilers fans, we love to eat this stuff up. And we love when there's a perceived, you know, misstep by the organization. And Bag Milk, you pointed it out before we got on air. He's still available. He's still a free agent. No team has been like, oh, Blumel, free agent. I'm going to grab him. So there's that. But yeah, when you give up on a 21-year-old before his entry-level contract status is over, it's always going to turn a couple eyebrows, and that's what it did.
He had an NHL E of about 22. So if you're wondering what kind of offense he may produce in the NHL, somewhere around there.
I was going to say, yeah, he's a defensive 20, specialist.
NHL 2, that like 22 points is kind of what they expected. Yeah. He kept on his trajectory.
Yeah, that's based on his top end. Based on his performance in the Czech League, yeah.
He's a really good defensive player. That's all it is.
Oh my God.
They can still sign him.
He's still a free agent. Well, so like, can all the other 32.
Can we just talk about how many people like looked at the team and you guys didn't even notice?
Yeah, I was just gonna say how many of those people could have said would have listed Matej Blumel as one of the 50 contracts last year.
But they're also saying like the team didn't know. Like they didn't know that's going to happen.
You don't know that.
Well, the element is the social media was posting about him the day after his rights expired. That's the
same day, actually.
The
thing that I would counter with is what's more likely, that the Oilers gapped on a prospect that they may or may not want to sign, or is it more likely that the social media team just didn't know? And they had him on
perhaps
a list.
They didn't
or something.
Send the email. So there's so many things. It's maybe so they you guys do this stuff, isn't there? Like scheduled posts
all the time.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So it's going out there already. Never. And then you know, and what kind of timing is involved? Like it's
so
all
funny.
The people that overreacted. Like I'm terrified for the people and their families. Like, is this what you do normally? Like, you drop a Slurpee at the end of the world. Like, I don't understand.
Hey, what kind of Slurpee?
So upset.
Ken Holland doesn't run the social media.
All the different kinds. All the different kinds.
Hold on.
Pepsi or Coke.
Tyler, can you confirm that?
That Ken Holland doesn't run the social media? I can
just know that.
Exclusive.
How do you know that?
Oh man, some people.
I do actually know.
Maybe he's dipping in, trying to stay in touch with the fans.
An Oilers Nation exclusive.
Could you imagine? All the other teams do have their GMs running the account. The Oilers are the only one that hires somebody from outside.
Like Dan, though, I also know who it is that runs the Twitter account for the Oilers, and I guarantee that she probably just didn't know.
Exactly.
Or scheduled, you know.
But also had no ability to fix that mistake, by the way. Let's just throw that out there.
Why do you change it at that point?
I was just like, who cares?
Why change it at that point?
I like her bio on Twitter, social media manager for the Edmonton Oilers. Not sure who's starting in net. And I think that's fucking hilarious. Also, a couple days ago was the anniversary of a post for the Toronto Blue Jays where they sent out a thing being like, Justin Smoke will not play today. And someone replied and said, is he been traded? They said, no, it's lower back tightness. And the person responded to the official Blue Jays account and said, source? Question mark.
Oh, that was such a good day in history.
We're the Blue Jays.
Literally us, the Blue Jays.
I love social media for that reason. I love Oilers fans for our overreactions about absolutely everything.
I also love
you mean like a third defenseman coming up?
Yeah. I also love the people who are always like, oh, it's some little intern running the social media department. It's like, yeah, this multi-billion-dollar corporation or whatever has an unpaid person running their Twitter, I'm sure.
In 2021, when it's that vital. Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. Oilers fans overreacting. Boys, we had a couple of questions left over from last week's segment. Again, I brought it back from North by North Gretz. We've been around for a while. Maybe that's a name you haven't heard for a while. Welcome. Ask the Idiots. If you have a question for Ask the Idiots, send it to us. Hit us up, ON Radio Podcast, or just hit any of us up on social. Just say, hey, this is for Ask the Idiots. I got a question. We'll write it down, just like I have these written down. Gentlemen, this first one comes from M. McKinnon. Sorry, Dan, it's not Nathan McKinnon. He's not hitting us up for Ask the Idiots. How much cap space should the Oilers leave themselves for the upcoming season for acquisitions as well as re-signing players next offseason like Nurse? Who wants to jump in on that?
So the
those
question
are two
is...
different. Those are two different things, though.
Yes.
Because you don't like, you can spend whatever and then still and then in the offseason get more money from Nurse. So I say going into this one, 2.5-ish maybe. That gets you, if you're making a trade near the deadline, it gets you a pretty, it leaves you one really big name or two fairly decent paychecks.
Yeah, for me, there's no reason to be going into this offseason and saying like, oh, we got to leave $5 million for when we need to sign Nurse and Puljujarvi next year. Like, one, Darnell Nurse is already making 5.6. So his raise is going to be like, what?
2.5.
Max a $2 million raise to bring him to a $7.6 million player. So you don't actually have to keep that much money aside for him. And my opinion, you don't have to keep any at all. You'll make that work next year. If they are worried about it, though, you know, maybe you just sign a one-year deal with someone, right? Instead of going and signing a bunch of multi-year deals, that's one way to play it safe. But I don't think the Oilers can afford to go into this offseason and be like, oh, we got to worry about, you know, a couple years down the road here. I think they need to be spending to the cap this offseason because you need to turn yourself into a cup contender here. This is the summer where Ken Holland has all the flexibility in the world. He's got money to make some moves. He's got some prospects, some draft picks. He can do some damage this summer, and I don't want to hear any excuses. And to me, sitting there going, we got to wait for Darnell's contract, that's an excuse. I don't want to hear it.
I agree.
Okay, but what about my two and a half there so you can make an acquisition come the deadline when we know most of those teams pick up a player or something like that?
I guess
5 is definitely too much, but what about if you got like injury type of situation? Is there like,
well, there's got to
be like a bit of a,
the big question mark is the Clefbaum number, right? Whether that goes to LTIR or not. But yeah, I would say anywhere from $2 to $3 million this offseason. The answer for the next question though also includes the fact that for next year, we only have 5 forwards on the books and 2 defensemen, and they're Broberg and Bouchard. No goalies. So, like, there's a lot of work to be done this summer. I'm just saying that there's a lot of question marks that are still left to be answered. That's a good question for maybe the start of next season.
Yeah. But yeah,
I'm going to say,
I'll go.
I'm just gonna say, if they have a couple million bucks, like in that, like, great, you know. Otherwise, they'll have to find a way to tap dance it a little bit. Like, you know, how does Tampa
2 million?
And that's exactly it. Like, even if you spend to the cap to start the season, you need to be a good enough organization to figure it out. If you're making a big move at the deadline for a forward, then you need to tell the other team, hey, you're taking Kyle Turris, by the way, or like, hey, you're taking Chris Russell, or you're doing something like that to make the money work. I'm still remember the year where they, you know, traded Eberle and all that, made all those moves. And didn't they go into that season with like $5 to $6 million in cap space? Because it's
cap space. We're cap
saving space it for the deadline. And then you're out of the fucking race. And you're like, oh shit.
That's why we had a giant monkey in the office.
Cap space is living upstairs at the office.
Yeah. That was Dan's addition to the Christmas gift exchange that year. Giant monkey named cap space.
If the option at the end of this, let's say we're 3 weeks into the offseason and the Oilers have $3 million left, they've made some big moves and all this, and they're sitting there and Thomas Tatar is still on the market.
Spend.
And he goes, I'll take $3 million on a 1 year deal to play for you.
Spend.
And Ken Holland better not go, sorry, I'm saving that for a hypothetical deadline move.
Spend.
No, that's
spend,
fair. Spend, that's spend. Fair.
Next up, we got Josh checking in. What do the Oilers do about the goaltending problem, or who do they sign? Who or look to try and acquire? One more time. I fucked that up. Josh, I apologize. What will the Oilers do about the goaltending problem? Who do they sign or look to get? Anybody? Like, we've said Merzlikins a bunch of times. That'd be a fun one. I don't know how realistic that is. I haven't really looked at the UFA goalies who's out there this year. Peter Mrazek, we've mentioned. Grubauer would be excellent, but I just can't imagine he leaves Colorado.
Frank Cervalli said on the DFO rundown, he told us on Real Life, sorry, that he thinks there's a chance he gets to market. Like, Colorado might be that cap strap. I did an article about this on June 21st on The Nation, so I can rattle off the names I had there. The free agents in no particular order. I had Philip Grubauer, Peter Mrazek, Linus Allmark, Chris Drieger, Frederick Anderson, and Antti Raanta. And then on the trade market, I had Alexander Georgiev, Elvis Merzlikins, and Darcy Kemper. If I had to pick out of that list, my dream trade scenario would either be Kemper or Merzlikins. And on the free agent market, I would love Allmark. I would love Grubauer, but he's going to cost you more than $6 million. I think Mrazek or Allmark would be really good targets, or Anderson on the free agent market.
Dan, do you have a goalie that tickles your fancy, my friend?
Well, it was Tuukka Rask, but he's mentioned that he's either going to not play ever again or be a Boston Bruin. So, for me, I thought Tuukka Rask would be a sneaky good pickup for this team to kind of bridge that gap into the kids that we have coming up.
If you brought him in, what's your tandem if you brought him in?
Him and Smith.
Him and
Smith would have been, for this year. But that's a moot point now because it's over. I don't know. Like other than those common names, the guys that I would be open to talking to is a Devin Dubnyk. I absolutely would. I would.
Have
love
you
to have
looked
Dubnyk.
At his numbers over the last couple of years?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I'm a fan of Dubnyk's. I think he's a solid goaltender as long as he gets
out of the tall guys. You tall guys all stick together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dan, he hasn't had a save percentage over 900 since 2018.
Okay. And he's also playing on. Who did he play? I was just going to say, who did he play for?
Minnesota and San Jose, and then Colorado.
San Jose and Minnesota. And then Colorado, he did nothing in Colorado because he wasn't given a chance.
We didn't get any time. He got a little bit at the very end.
He was Grubauer's. He was behind Grubauer.
Grubauer got hurt.
I'd be open to talking to a Devin Dubnyk.
Rick, anybody that tickles your fancy will dance talking Devin Dubnyk?
I'm saying off the list. Off of the list of the big guys.
That was one of the only things that perked Tyler up throughout this whole podcast. I just saw his eyes.
He's been yawning. Like, he's been yawning what? Like 13 times until Dubnyk's name got brought up.
I'm going to get to me and Dan disagreeing in Hot and Cold Performers. I have something to say about it there. But like,
ooh.
Dan, how can you look at all the names that are out there and be like, I want to sign the 35-year-old who's
been I literally prefaced it with the guys that you listed being going off of those names because I didn't want to say Peter Mrazek. Like, I don't know. I was just saying that there's a guy that I would actually look at. Still, James Reimer's another guy I would still look at. Is that going to upset you?
James Reimer isn't as bad. No, I he would have to be like
David Ayers. Let's go get David Ayers. Dan.
Yes. I'm interested in looking at him.
He can clean
too.
The ice if he's not playing.
But here's the thing, and I talked about this last year when we talked about signing Mike Smith. Mike Smith to me still should be your plan J, your plan L. You know, like that's a guy that you get down to that list number at and say, okay, yeah, now we can talk. But the Koskinen situation to me is more pressing because of that, because they keep talking about this stupid Mike Smith contract that we're going to offer him of $2 million.
Yeah, but he's going to be like, that's not the issue, because if Mike Smith is one of your goaltenders, that's not the end of the world. It's all about who the next goaltender is.
And well, they got to figure out what they're doing with Koskinen.
Whatever, they can figure that out. They'll get honestly, he's not going to be here. You got to have to move on from that somehow. You whatever, figure it out. That's your job. You get paid a lot of money to figure it out. I don't know if there's a UFA out there though. I don't think the UFA is the way to go.
I've got one for you. Nobody's talking about him. He's a little bit older. Ken Dryden. Very successful with Montreal. If you give him the right chance.
Wait, did you see his save percentage last year?
He hasn't made a save in 3 decades.
Exactly.
There's nobody more books out there, that he's man. Made saves. The UFAs, I don't think there's really anybody out there in terms of what we need. We need someone who can come in here at 25, 26, 28, 29, you know, like right in that age category. That's
how. What about Dave?
Three
Ridge?
Years, 4 years.
Anyway, sorry, Rick.
We're getting them out of here.
Rick, outline your criteria for what you want in a UFA goaltender, what you'd want.
Oh, what's yeah. Age category, the vote, you know, he's got to be in that prime of his career. He's got to be in the Connor, you know, obviously he can be a couple years old and be around, you know, around 20, 29. He's got to be here for about 3-4 years, because we do have some guys come behind that we do have some question marks about, and they're very well could be good goaltenders. We need someone to get by the next 3 or 4 years. There's going to have to be a legit number one who's ready to roll. And because we are right now, we're in a time period where we have to win right now. So there's no more messing around with older goaltenders. We need to find a guy who's a 4 year. That has to be number one right now.
I agree with you. But I don't think you can say that than say there's no one on the UFA market. Peter Mrazek's 29. He's shown now that he can be a number one goalie.
That blows my mind. I feel like he was playing for the
he should be 40,
Red Wings when Yzerman was still there. Yeah.
But Mrazek's 29, coming off a year where he had a 206 goals against and a 923 save percentage. He only played 12 games. He was banged up. That might mean he comes a little bit cheaper than you'd expect.
What kind of injuries?
I don't know off the top of my
head. Because
it's
like an abdominal, like groin type of stuff. You want to stay away from a guy like that. If, you know, it's something that, you know, like finicky stuff, that's fine.
Freddie Anderson's only 31. He can give you 3-4 years of being an NHL goalie. And before this season, he was consistently around the 918 range. Freddie Anderson can be that guy. Chris Drieger, 27 years old. He's only had 1 year in the NHL. So maybe you're sketched.
But he's not going to make it to UFA, right? He's going to get moved.
Well, you can be the team who makes a move for him.
Okay, fair. Yeah, yeah.
And the last name is Linus Ullmark is probably the Linus Ullmark should be their target. He's 27 years old. He's put up nothing but good numbers on a team that has been nothing but dog shit in his time there. Like Buffalo's fucking awful, and he still puts up good numbers. Ullmark is 27, and he's a UFA. He should be their guy.
Yeah, but I think
sure. That's the type of goaltender that I'm going for. That's fine.
Isn't he the one that everybody's kind of sniffing around at and probably going to have that number go up higher because of exactly what you said, Tyler, that Buffalo
wouldn't be surprised by that.
Way worse.
How high can it go? And then he's going to have the same situation where a guy like Nuge is going to have like, yep, there's going to be teams offering you more, but do you want to win or do you want to go back to a Buffalo situation where you're going to make some big ass money, but you're not going to, your team's not going to be great. Do you want to go win? And like, listen, who do you want us to call? I can give Connor the phone. I can give Lee on the phone. Like, who do you – Wayne, Grant. Like, you want
not Wayne
players,
anymore.
Old players?
Are we still allowed to get Wayne to make calls for us? That's a good question. I'd love to know if Wayne's going to make calls for us.
You're damn right he is.
I
almost guarantee – oh, he's going to have to be working. But if I saw him in a box come the next playoff run, I would not be surprised.
Oh, he'll be there for sure. Producer Clark with our last question. Ask the Idiots. Again, if you have a question, hit us up. ON Radio Podcast, Twitter, Instagram, or just hit us up on our personal socials if you like. Ask the Idiots. Last question comes in from Producer Clark. What is Stuart Skinner's ceiling? Does anybody have a guess on that? I'm going to say I have no guess because goalies are voodoo. I have no idea.
I agree.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I think right now he's on track. He had a really good year last year. So I think expecting him to take the next step is fine. But I have no idea after that.
The only knowledge I have of him is statistical, and it's just watching the trends to the prospect update. He's been up and down this year more than previous years. That's the only thing I can say. Other than that, I don't really
have.
Did
he have a 12-game win streak this year?
Yep.
Or was that last season?
And then he had a couple games where he got. Or no, that was last season. Sorry, yeah. But there was a couple stretches with the Condors this year where it was like lights out hockey, and then they fell off, and they were looking like they may not even make the playoffs, and then they came back and they won the AHL playoffs. Remember that, Rick?
The what?
The AHL playoffs. They won them all. Remember?
I didn't think they had those this year.
So
put the banner up.
Producer Clark, we have no idea, man. That's just the reality. Goalies are like, I have no guesses on goalies.
Well, and to be fair to us too, we don't watch Stuart Skinner play the game either.
Oh dear.
No, but we follow enough that we should be able to pull off someone else's report. We've watched or read a couple other things.
Yeah,
we usually have but it's a goaltender, and like Bag Milk said, man, they're voodoo. I've tried to stop getting off the which goaltender should start.
So nobody here is saying he has Vezina potential.
No. I'm saying he does. You can't rule that out.
Well, Rick, we have Rick saying it first.
Yeah, so Rick Vezina is on potential. Record as saying
I'm not,
potential.
I am not ruling out at least one Vezina for him in his career. You can put it down. I will not rule out one Vezina for him in his career.
There you go. Ask the Idiots for another week. Send us your questions. If you want to be included in the segment, we're going to do it weekly, provided that we have questions. Hit us up, ON Radio Podcast, Twitter and Instagram, or on any of our personal socials as well. Tyler, time to get your buttons ready, my friend. It is time for the Deuce Vodka Hot and Cold Performers of the Week.
Bring it on, Tyler.
I'm looking forward to this. Mm-hmm. If you head on over to deucevodka.com/find us, the first thing you will see on your page is a handsome picture of Brett Kissel standing by a lake in the mountains. It's beautiful. He's holding a bottle of Deuce Vodka. But there's also a store locator there. If you're looking for a cocktail this weekend, I encourage you to give it a try. Maybe you want to try a Neon Nation Bomb, just like our friend Brad Stepenko. Maybe the store locator will help you get there. DeuceVodka.com, all the info you need. If you're in Saskatchewan, reach out to sales@deucevodka.com. And don't forget to ask your local retailers to carry it as well. As we do each week, gentlemen, we start with our veggies and the cold performers of the week. Tyler, is your cold performer about Dan? Like, is it a cold performer or is it a hot performer? I want to get the fight started.
Am I going first for cold performers?
Tyler, yes. Yeah, cold performer of the week.
The fans in Montreal who were flipping cop cars and doing all that absolute nonsense. Listen, I understand it's a bit of a joke to be like, it's a Canadian tradition. You're in the cup final, you riot a little bit. You do some damage to public property. You mess with some cop cars. That's what we do. But like, can we just like climb the light pole?
Don't you normally do it when you win, though?
Well, or lose. But like, you know, climb the light poles, set up fireworks, set up fireworks in the street, do a bunch of stuff. But do we really have to like vandalize cars that are parked on the side of the street? Like, I don't know. I just think that whole thing is a little bit lame, and like find cooler ways to celebrate and don't be flipping things and lighting stuff on fire. Montreal police make 15 arrests. Like, don't get arrested just because your team's in the cup final. Because now
those are rookie numbers. You got to pump that average up.
Regardless, I just think it's really, really dumb. So the Habs fans who are doing dumb shit in the street, you got my cold performer of the week.
Wheaton Oil had a great tweet last night where the car flipping had started and the fires and whatever. And he just said, yes, nature is healing. And it is.
Well, that's the best part. The 3,500 fans inside the arena walked out to 80,000 fans outside the arena, and chaos ensued.
Dan, you're next up. Deuce Vodka, cold performer of the week.
Well, I'm scared now how Tyler's is going to break down into a hot performer. But my cold performer of the week is going to be one former NHL goaltender, Brian Boucher, who just wanted to be the fun police. Everybody that is anybody that is watching hockey right now can see that there is an issue with referee. And Brian Boucher, for some unknown reason, decided he was going to be one of the guys that's just going to tell everybody to stop whining and shut up because it's playoff hockey. And that's just not going to happen, Brian. It's time that the league starts to change. Actually, it probably is going to happen. Let's be honest. We're all going to back off of this, and we won't talk about it until next playoff run, and we'll have the same conversation. But for right now, let people be mad. Let people be frustrated. Brian Boucher, you're my Deuce Vodka Cold Performer of the Week.
Worst.
Rick, you're next up. Deuce Vodka Cold Performer.
There's more than just one. I'm going to give it to the entire top six for the Vegas Knights. And they could probably extend it more than just a week. Like, I don't have their numbers in front of me, but I think Stone went, one goal in 12 games or something like that, and five or six games with no points. And he had a stat line yesterday of after the two periods was all zeros. I really wanted to find that. I can't remember what Raptors coach it was, but he was all – Sam Mitchell, I think he's all angry in a press conference once. And he's like, a stat line is 0-0-0-0-0-0-0. Like, it was hilarious. But no, that top six, you let your team down. Sorry. You let a team that was a lesser team beat you guys because you guys didn't show up. So the top six, you're the cold performer of the week.
Are you thrilled? I'm not.
I was also going to say the same thing for my cold performer of the week. So now I'm scrambling a little bit.
Do it. Do it again.
I'm vamping.
Give it to Tyler for not ripping on Dan. Like, he's going to pump his tires on the next part. I'm confused. That's about to happen.
Yeah, you teased us a little bit. So, you know what? I've got it. My Deuce Vodka cold performer of the week is our boy Waz. Why? Because he reminded us all of Peter Chiarelli's work from 5 years ago yesterday as like a throwback Thursday type item. I know I approved it, Waz. I approved the post, but you made it. You made it. You reminded all of us of how bad Peter Chiarelli was as the Oilers GM. So, Waz, I love you. This week, cold performer of the week.
That's a joke. That's an absolute joke is what it is.
All right, I'm trying again. Tyler, you're my Deuce Vodka. I'm starting off hot performer of the week. Let's go.
We are quite often wrong in our predictions, and especially when it comes to the Stanley Cup Finals, we love to sit here and think like, oh, the best team will prevail. And we like to pretend that, this grinding hockey, I just thought, there's no way Montreal succeeds. There's no way the Islanders, it'll be Vegas, Tampa. They'll both be over quick. And Dan sat there, even though I chirped him for it and I ripped him and I said he was insane. He said, no, it will be the Habs and Islanders. And at this point, Dan, I don't even care if the Islanders win game 7 tonight. I am giving you a ton of credit for going against the grain and saying, fuck it all. Islanders, Habs, you said mass chaos for your prediction. You absolutely nailed it.
Put some respect on my name.
I absolutely am, because you were right and I was wrong.
Dan was right. However, I would also say that what I hoped for last week was Montreal, the Islanders, and we made these predictions. I just didn't say that was my pick. So I'm giving myself partial marks. Thank you. Dan, you're next up. Your rebuttal.
Dan, but you will only ever be my hot performer of the week again if Devin Dubnyk has a 920 save percentage next year with the Oilers.
Or any team.
Nation Dan's next up. Deuce Vodka, hot performer of the week.
All right. Well, thank you, Tyler. That's if you don't look at my bracket, that would be great, because that's where all the predictions I wasted went. But my hot performer of the week is going to go out to the first NFL player in their history to be openly gay while playing the game.
Absolutely.
While playing the game.
Michael Sam was coming in.
He was never on an active roster, though.
Yeah, he never.
He was, okay, fair, but he was a high draft pick of that. But nonetheless, you're 100% right, Dan.
My hot performer of the week is Carl Nassib, and I don't know if I'm saying that name correctly completely, but for being proud of who he is. Let's just say it how it is. In this Pride Month, it's super important for young men and women, young people of every gender to see and hear this stuff and hear people that are just proud of who they are and they're comfortable being that person. So that's my hot performer of the week, Carl Nassib. You are it.
I sorry, I'm on the wrong page here for the button I wanted. There we go.
Also, just to further Dan's point, Carl Nassib also donated $100,000 to the Trevor Project as well. So
thank you.
Very, very, a lot of props to him. This week means the world to a lot of people. Who's next? Rick, you're up. Deuce Vodka, hot performer of the week.
Well, much like I did to you, Dan did to me. So well done. You know what? I look outside and I'm going to give props to this city this beautiful city. It gets shit on when it comes to UFA time and whatever else stuff. But those who live here understand its beauty. Look outside. Go outside. We're about to have a fantastic summer, perhaps the hottest hottest week we've ever had. So this is to the city of Edmonton. She's beautiful. I love it. And I don't plan on leaving anytime soon. So Edmonton, you are the hot performer of the week.
Dem Arby's boys, wheels up. Ski, skirt.
My Deuce Vodka hot performer of the week is going to Netflix for Sexy Beast coming up in July. Do you guys see that preview?
No.
Where people are dressed basically as furries going on.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. It is the exact kind of trash show that I love to watch. And as soon as I saw that preview come up yesterday, I was like, oh my God, I love this kind of bullshit TV. And then people know that I love this kind of bullshit TV. So I kept getting tagged in it. It's like, this is a show for you, Bag Milk. This is a show for you. And I'm like, it is a good show for me. So Netflix, thank you. But for real, I'm going to say my Deuce Vodka hot performer of the week is science, because this morning before the podcast, I went and got vaccine number dose. And I think we're all tooed up, are we?
Everyone kiss each other through the screen.
I got pushed back to Tuesday, but I'm right there again. Don't worry.
So Rick will get his on Tuesday, but the rest of us are all fully vaxxed. So my hot performer of the week is science. Thank you very much, science.
You know what time it is, y'all. The NHL is back.
Have one more I wanted to give a shout out to. Sorry for jumping in on the soundbite there. But is the Edmonton Public School Board for naming the new school in Keswick, yes, the Joey Moss School. Yeah. That's fucking right. That's awesome stuff.
Absolutely.
Also, that is great news. We also got two new reviews for the podcast in the last week.
Oh, go ahead.
The first one from Travel Me Something. That's the name, something. Great sound, great pod. I might have hearing problems, but I don't even notice these crunching sounds. Thanks for helping us pass the time, especially during the last year and a half. Keep the laughs coming, and we'll keep coming back. Appreciate the shout out to the crunching sounds.
I thought that was going to start off way worse. It sounded like a, here's what's good, and now here's what.
Yeah, the here comes the backhand. Yeah. What's the second one?
RCA72. Oilers Nation getting me through this long COVID summer. After another disappointing early playoff exit, these guys talked me off the ledge and gave me a new glimmer of hope. Whether it was the hockey talk or just the random bullshit back and forth, they kept me engaged with each episode. If the crinkling sound of a beard on a mic bothers you, you may want to follow the flames. Woo!
Fuck yeah.
If you want to leave us a review, we'll read it. We'll read it. Hit us up on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast from. I want to know what you think. I want to know what you think. And also, Tyler, how do people leave a message? I know that's for real life, but like.
Yeah. So you go to speakpipe.com/real life pod. And if you leave a message and just say, this is for Oilers Nation Radio, I'll get it and we'll play it on this pod. I didn't check the inbox yet this week, though, so I'm sorry if I missed one.
I'll also include a link in the article for the podcast, OilersNation.com, as well. So leave us a message. Get in on the podcast. We want to include you as much as we can. So leave us a message. Hit us up with a question for Ask the Idiots. And in the meantime, tell everybody around you about Oilers Nation Radio. Brand new episodes coming out every single Friday, no matter what's going on. Sometimes we'll stop and have a little baseball chat in the middle of the podcast. Because sometimes pitchers be taking their clothes off, you know? It is what it is. From all of us here on the podcast, I'm Bag Milk, Rick, Tyler, and Dan, and our friends at Sherwood Ford, Skip the Dishes, Cornerstone Insurance, and Deuce Vodka. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening every Friday. Thank you for helping this podcast grow, even though there is nothing going on with the Edmonton Oilers right now. It's really amazing. Every month, Tyler sends out a little report with all the podcast numbers. And this show is growing nicely. And that's all because of you welcoming us into your ear holes and letting us massage your little brains throughout the weekend. Thank you very much. This is Oilers Nation Radio. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Shout out Matej Blumel.
Best wishes.
Thanks for listening to Oilers Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media to stay up to date and never miss a podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.